This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to the Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. It's currently 7:48 in the morning, Thursday, the 9th of July, and we are going to be taking a look at, actually, Census 2020. Because we know this week, Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin launched it, and this time the census, which is carried out once every 10 years, goes online, and the online census portion will stretch from July 7th to September 30th, and the data gathered from this exercise gives the government information about the makeup of Malaysian society.
Yeah, it includes information on population size, distribution, and other socioeconomic factors related to income, housing, health and education. So, of course, we know that this census matters because the statistics will allow the government and inform them to make good policy, hopefully, making decisions such as on the budget and the Malaysia plan.
So, to better understand the impact of the census on economic policy, we speak to Professor Noor Aisharia, who is the Professor of Economics at Sunway University. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. Now, we know that the census is important because it informs policy and, by extension, the development of a nation. But could you help spell out how this exactly works?
Good morning, Xiaoning and Chuang. So thank you for having me on BFM 89.9. So yes, with the census data, the one that currently launched by the Prime Minister, we are actually collecting the data on various demographic, social and economic features of the population and households across all the residential areas throughout Malaysia. So like as you had mentioned, Xiaoning, so there are two phases here in the My Census 2020. So the first phase is the online using the e-census, and the second phase is the interview. So once these data are being collected, they are interpreted and thoroughly processed by the statisticians. And finally, it is used by the stakeholders like Economic Planning Unit, Central Bank of Malaysia, and then disseminated to the public. So let's take, for example, the household's income data. It is divided across different income groups. So we can have the picture of the T20, the M40 and B40. And within this each of income group as well, it is further divided into Bumiputra and non-Bumiputra. So another example of the data that that we can look at is, for example, the data on the agricultural industries. So the data collected is very detailed indeed to the type of agricultural products such as paddy, rubber and others. So with these comprehensive census data, policymakers can use them as important source to charter the future of a country and academicians to conduct research using the most granular data.
Yeah, Prof, what are some policies that have been implemented as a result of past census findings?
Okay, so in the past, these census data are used by the government as inputs for the formulations of the national development plans. So for example, households expenditure data that were extracted before are used as the basis to determine the types of goods and services to be included in the baskets and to update the weights of the consumer price index when we are calculating our CPI. So the inputs, the data is collected from the household expenditure data. So another example is from the household's income and basic amenities data that had been collected. So these household's income and basic amenities data, it covers education, health, housing, and household appliances and amenities. So from these data, it gives information on income distribution pattern of the households, the current statistics on the poor households, and to identify the accessibility of basic amenities by households. So these has been used as part of inputs in the 10-year Malaysia economic planning.
Now, you're an economist who often deals with data, but what kind of data could Malaysia do better at collecting and also mining?
So in my opinion, the data that so far we have collected, so in this case is that DOSIM, right, is really like comprehensive enough and in detail indeed. But the problem is not so much about like the types of data that we're collecting or the mining, but the problem is more on the open access and transparency of the data. So will there be gap or missing data points, uncensored? Because in the past, with the data collection, undersampling can be a critical shortcoming.
Yeah, Prof, a census is supposed to provide a snapshot, right? But would conducting this during a recession, when job losses are exaggerated, for example, would this all make sense for a census?
Yes, I think this is the time when the census data is much needed to provide more accurate insights and targeted into the problem arising, especially during the recessions. Like Chong, you had mentioned about the unemployment situations, right? And we are aware as of March this year, the number of unemployment is roughly about 600,000 people. So to address this issue, such as unemployment during the recessions, we need to know the extent and nature of the problem. So how many people are unemployed? How did they become unemployed? Are they men or women? Are they young or old? So when we have census data, it gives us the information on the demographic of these unemployed, such as their age categories, the kind of industries they are working, the location, their skills, their income, level of education, gender. So when we have these statistics, policymakers can design a targeted intervention quickly that can provide economic support. Do we need to reskill them and also entrepreneurship support?
And Professor, I just want to ask about privacy of the data collected during the census, because, you know, we need to be assured so that everyone will actually fill in whatever they need to fill in and, you know, be honest about their answers. What assurances do we have with that, actually?
So currently at this moment, I think the assurance that comes from the DOSM itself, right? They say that under the act that has been established on the census data, so the information that can be disseminated to the public are only at aggregated levels. So they will not publish the information on individuals that participated in the census. So other assurances besides the DOSM guaranteed that the data is not, you know, the data on particular information are not going to be released, I am not aware of. So definitely the privacy will be an issue in this census data collections, especially if we have leaking of the information and stuff like that.
So, Prof, the government has talked about having a higher, in fact, revised poverty line, and that could lead to a higher poverty figure. In your opinion, how might this help tackle the poverty issue more effectively?
So, currently, the well-known indicators, the often used indicators of poverty are poverty line and Gini coefficients. So, the poverty line is in Malaysia, based on internationally accepted standard, is RM980. Per households per month for urban family of four. So these are translated into only 0.4% living below the national poverty line. So the United Nations has found this to be misleadingly low and inadequate because it ignores the long neglected populations in the country, such as refugees, stateless people, unregistered Malaysians, and the migrant workers that are also central to the country's success. With the Gini index, a Malaysia Gini index is about 42.8% in 2018. But this means that the income gap in the country is narrowing. But the problem with the Gini index is it is the income that is narrowing, but the assets and the wealth distribution is widening. So these two indicators are insufficient to provide the realistic picture of the poverty in the country. So many economists and academicians had proposed multidimensional poverty index that can reveal non-income inequality, including the nutrition, employment, education, access to healthcare, sanitation, access to government programs. So the interventions will be more targeted to what the essential needs are.
Prof, what is your sense of Malaysia's Gini coefficient in 2020? Do you think it's gotten wider or is it narrower?
Definitely. With the impact of this COVID-19, not only in Malaysia, but across the other countries as well, we expect that the Gini coefficients to be to increase. That means the income inequality is going to be widened.
Thank you for joining us on the line this morning. That was Professor Noor Aisharia of Sunway University, all about Census 2020 and how important it is in terms of the data collected, which is then used to formulate policy and also for academic research.
Yeah, I found her last comments on the Gini coefficient to be very, very interesting because, you know, this whole wealth divide, the gap between the haves and the have-nots is very much the crux of why there's so many demonstrations all over the world, right? And at 42.8, we're not much better than the African countries or even the poorer South American countries. I guess that's why policymakers have been trying to address this wealth gap with the B40s and the BRIM payments and all that. But also intrinsically, I think corruption does a lot of you know, damage in terms of taking away from a disadvantage where they should have been getting the privileges.
Yeah, but the other thing she highlights is that we shouldn't be unnecessarily focused on Gini coefficient, because it doesn't necessarily show other forms of inequality. Access to education, for example, access to sanitation, maybe even things like affordable accommodation, which are critical to the quality of your life, right?
So I've got to align myself with her, because I think that I agree with her that I think the Gini is worse. And if we include all those non-financial metrics in there, it could be a lot wider, because, for example, if you live in the rural areas, you don't have access to great utilities or education, sanitation, etc. It could be a lot worse.
Yeah, I think she already probably admits it, right? Because the world is heading into a global recession. COVID-19 has affected a lot of households, and, you know, savings have been eroded. But, you know, it's something that we're going to have to talk about. And we're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, the breakfast grill, where Roshan speaks to the CEO of Malaysian Steel Institute, Lim Keng Yao. Stay tuned for that happening in a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.